Robert Scott Bell Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
The voice of health, freedom, and liberty. Here's Robert Scott Bell.
All right, special edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show. Why is it special? Because I'm flying while I'm doing the show. How is that possible? No, it's not drugs. I don't do drugs. It's because I'm heading to Atlanta for a medical conference, and I hope to see you there. In the meantime, I got Jonathan Emord off the road. I don't know how I got him, but he's here, and Sacred Fire of Liberty commences now. Jonathan.
Yes, sir.
Every minute I can with you. I wanted the update, and I realized it might be hard this week as much as, I mean, you had the big Trump event in Virginia, and did you get a lot of signatures?
Oh, my goodness. Over 2,000 signatures from 30 volunteers of Team Emord arrived at, I think they were there as early as 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed all day long. They went to the rally, some of them. Some of them were real troopers, stayed out there continuously collecting from people. There were so many people attending, they couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
So they were helping us by signing petitions. Over 2,000 signatures in one day.
That's great.
We're now well over the 10,000 mark that is the minimum for Virginia. So we're padding the numbers. That's wrong word. We are getting more signatures just to ensure that we have the margins.
Just in case.
Necessary to avoid any problems. And we're doing that both in the districts and overall. We will likely file on the first available day to do that. Thank goodness, because of the incredible efforts of just dozens of volunteers for Team Emord all across Virginia.
Well, thank you for the Trump MAGA folks in Virginia for allowing you be the candidate to do that and get you, you know, over that big hurdle of, you know, the obstacle for incumbents to try and keep good competition out, or any, if that for that matter. Do you think, you know, we've talked about some of the people that are running for U.S. Senate in the Republican side of the equation. And in fact, there were some bizarre claims by that Hung Cao guy that I think the cat's out of the bag now, though. They asked questions about the interviews about him. And I remember his claim that he somehow balanced the Navy's budget. And we talked about that off the air going, what? How? What?
Yeah, I just don't understand, you know, why you would dare say that thing. Here's the thing, Robert. He not only made that claim a few times, he made it dozens of times. And it's just horrendous because an active duty military guy like him, he was a captain in the Navy and he was stationed at the Pentagon. Active duty military cannot balance the Navy budget, even if he, you know, he's not an accountant, but even if he were an accountant, he could not be assigned the task of balancing the Navy's budget because that is reserved to the civilians. And it is a civilian function that is of oversight and control of the military. Remember, the founding fathers put civilians over the military, not allowing the military to have total control over their budget, for example. So the budget function is very securely by statute and regulation kept in the hands of the civilians. And in fact, the Undersecretary of the Navy Comptroller does that. He balances the budget for the Secretary of the Navy, but also he does that because or she does, depending on the person, but that is done for the express purpose of keeping it in civilian control. And the Undersecretary of the Navy, like the Secretary of the Navy, cannot have been on active military assignment fewer than 7 years prior to their appointment in those positions. So it's a preposterous claim. It's bizarre that someone would claim that, and he may have been responsible for giving some figures to on expenditures, you know, but that's not balancing.
No, that's a big leap to go from here. I gave him some numbers,
but it's not. He doesn't claim that at all. What he says is he balanced the whole Navy's budget, which is absurd. But that's what he claimed. He also claimed to be a Harvard fellow and an MIT fellow. He's not. He attended an executive seminar that was called a part of the Navy Fellowship with Harvard, Navy Fellowship with MIT. But that's not the same thing as being a Harvard Fellow.
Right.
I mean, so a Harvard Fellow.
So it looks, you know, what else he said, Robert.
This is also this came out to this morning when I spoke on Joe Thomas's WCHV in Charlottesville. I explained that he had intimated repeatedly that he had lived under communism, that he was adversely affected by communism as a child when he lived in Saigon. And in point of fact, he fled with his family from Saigon before the fall, quite a bit before. And so he never lived under communism. He even indicated that he had nightmares based on that history with communists coming into Saigon. But he wasn't there when that happened. So if he's having nightmares, it's out of sympathy. It's not out of experience.
A lot of inconsistencies, though.
Yeah, a lot of inconsistencies. And of course, he would be eaten alive by Tim Kaine. Now, having said that, no one disparages him one iota for the service that he provided to the country and the military. And I salute him for being in the active duty military. But that's not a license or an excuse for grossly embellishing your background and suggesting that you have credentials that you do not have.
Right. Run on your actual record or else.
That's more on the order of George Santos. That is not allowed. And I'll tell you, it's disqualifying. So when he runs against, if he were to run against Tim Kaine, Tim Kaine would eat him alive based on these falsehoods.
Yeah.
So we have to ensure that integrity reigns the day and that we do not have candidates that lack integrity based on false statements or misrepresentations of their background.
How else did the weekend go besides the signature gathering? Did you meet any cool folks at the event? And, you know, Cheryl, was she with you, your wife and other things? Tell a little about it.
We had the privilege of being special guests of the president. And so we were in the VIP section, which was lovely. We met all of our volunteers inside the stadium and many of them inside the center, convention center. And many of them were, you know, longtime supporters of us from the very start of the race. So it was really, really a lot of fun to meet with our supporters. And then afterwards, after the event, we met with them again in a hotel, a conference room, and it was filled with our supporters there. Wonderful. And they all had all these petitions and we had notaries there and they were signing, you know, notarizing. But also Trump's speech was phenomenal. I loved every minute of it. You know, he is so doggone smart. Clever is beyond, he's beyond clever. And the contrast between President Trump and Joe Biden, the potted plant, is just so profound. And he addressed all of the issues. He gave clear answers as to the direction he would take the nation. And it was very comforting to hear. He's a strong leader, and he's a person who, without question, is going to be giving us a very clear path to restore American greatness and get rid of this open border situation and on and on. But, you know, it was great to see him. And we also met a lot of leaders in Virginia who were there, who are very strong supporters of President Trump. A lot of people, Robert, there were some 5,000 people. I would imagine upwards of 2,000 could not even get in. But, you know, they were sad that they couldn't get in, but all of them were watching the speech on their phones. And it was nationally broadcast, of course.
I say, yeah, I saw bits of it. I was trying to see where's Jonathan sitting. I didn't know.
I was, if you were looking from the vantage point of the media, I was to the right of the podium.
Yeah.
Right of the podium in the first level of what were bleachers on the right hand side. And I was right next to the barrier there where, you know, where the president came by. It's so cool to see President Trump in person. But anyway, we're going to also be going down to Mar-a-Lago soon and hope to meet him literally face to face. And I'm, you know, delighted by that prospect. That's going to be a great thing.
Well, good. And hoping we can do a couple of fundraisers in Florida if it's around that trip or another one. There's still a lot of folks down there that want to see you become U.S. Senator. As I said, beyond the borders of the Commonwealth of Virginia, having you in the U.S. Senate will be very impactful for the few, those that are there that actually know we have a U.S. Constitution. And we're supposed to follow it, not trash it. It will greatly expand the capacity of those people that are good, trying to do good things there, as well as the things that you add as far as tackling the oligarchy, the deep state, as well as it manages manifest through things like FDA, EPA, all the regulatory aspects of our country now that are really destroying what's left of freedom for the people, destroying our economic, wherewithal to even be able to feed ourselves, much less be able to heat our homes in the winter and cool them in the summer or whatever. So there's a lot to be done. And you know, it's getting government the hell out of the way. I have to say it that frankly, because government has just mucked it all up. Reagan knew it. Others have known it. Our founding fathers knew that was the risk. And if people are looking for the government to solve the problems that government creates, delusional might be an understatement.
That's right, Robert. This is going to have to be a complete reversal of what this administration has done to our country if we're going to save it. Can you imagine another 4 years of Joe Biden? Robert, can you imagine the destruction, the open borders, the looting, the destruction of our property, our rights, our lives, all these people being killed, the acts of terror that will come from all the terrorists that have been allowed in, mm-hmm. Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad and all of the individuals who have gotten into this country who are part of the cartels and who are involved in sex trafficking and drug trafficking. I mean, we are awash in criminal elements that want to destroy this country because a president of the United States has refused to be the commander in chief that he's required to be and defend us from invasion. And it's very clearly an invasion. Our enemies are coming across and our criminals are coming across, and there's nothing to limit them, Robert. It is appalling, and it is threatening our survival. And if we had another 4 years of this, Robert, I'm telling you, crime would not only be through the roof, but we would also be seeing a situation where, look, we have 130,000 people died from fentanyl deaths last year, so it's up by about 60% this year. Can you imagine if that just keeps going up and up and up as drugs are counterfeited so that you have all sorts of drugs that's already happening where they're laced with fentanyl and lethal doses and people are being sent into cardiac arrest and death because of this. I mean, this has got to stop. And if we don't do it, if we don't defend America right now, we're going to lose our country, Robert.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you know, even getting into the U.S. Senate, what the obstacles are, you're not naive about it. I mean, you've done battle with the government, the oligarchy, the FDA, FTC and others through the court system. As I said, you've written legislation that ended up particularly, some of the things you wrote for Ron Paul ended up to be, that Right to Try Act. We've talked about that as well, to give people the freedom to utilize things not approved by the FDA, to save their life. So you know how to really bring some things that will be effective, but there's a lot of stuff going on right now, even with a lot of Republicans there, like the budget process. Have you seen these things? They're just like earmarking things for the Republicans too, so they'll vote on it. It's just a mess.
Look, you have to swing an axe against the rhinos who will be fighting President Trump, as well as the radical leftists who are, communists. And I want to be in that position, but I also want to be swinging the axe against both sides. But what I want to be able to do here, Robert, is to end this protectionism and this use of government agencies to protect the interests of those they're supposedly designed to regulate. We know the whole thing is a disaster. It's a disaster from both sides of the protectionism and the pro-communism. And we need to end the regulatory state in America. And that bill I wrote for Ron Paul, the Congressional Responsibility and Accountability Act, would do that very thing. And we also need to just get rid of the Department of Education, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Energy. We need to get rid of agencies of the government that are destroying the private sector. And we need to decentralize power and send back to the states powers that were usurped by the federal government so that we can have a constitutional republic that functions in the way in which the Constitution's supposed to. And that objective is a major one, but it can be achieved. And the neat thing about this is with a Trump presidency, and if we gain control of the U.S. Senate, we will fight so hard to get all of these things done. Because President Trump, as he made clear in that Virginia rally, is dedicated to achieving in the next 4 years a massive amount of change that will ensure that we have a roaring economy and that we have defense of our interests and we have borders that are secured, and that we get rid of the illegal elements in this country that threaten the lives, the liberties, and the property of American citizens, and that we bring back America first so that Americans can be confident that their rights will be protected and that their property and lives and liberties will be protected. And this whole anti-incarceration agenda and this whole defund the police agenda will be eliminated. And this whole woke movement to indoctrinate our kids and sexualize them when they're young, so you destroy their innocence, and this whole idea of gender fluidity, all this stuff is going to be kicked out, both of the military and in the schools. And these are united objectives of this president and of my objectives too. And we're going to see it happen, Robert, because I'm very confident. I mean, particularly, you know, Virginia just voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump in the primary. Nikki Haley just announced her decision to suspend her campaign. Mm-hmm. So now very clearly the Trump, he will be the standard bearer for the Republican Party without question. And also it looks as if Joe Biden is going to be the standard bearer there. So, yeah. Mm.
I saw in California, interestingly enough, I think it was yesterday, the day before the Super Tuesday thing, Steve Garvey, the Los Angeles Dodgers Hall of Famer.
Look at that.
Running as a Republican. I still am shocked that even California, as crazy as that is, that they put Adam Schiff in there. The guy that is like,
look, Garvey has a really good chance now, gone way up in the polls. Yeah. He's got a really good chance of beating Adam Schiff. I know California is insane, and their ballot, that there's so much fraud in California elections, it's not even funny. But if Garvey gets enough popular support, he can beat Schiff, even with all the fraud. They have to work against it super hard. But I'm telling you, if that happens, that will be a glorious celebration. There's no greater buffoon in the Congress, with the possible exception of the buddy of his who slept with the Chinese spy. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, but no, Adam Schiff is just like, you look at the guy, you're like, dude.
Evil, dishonest, lied about Trump, down there in the skiff saying, I've got the evidence against Trump. I have hard evidence. I have direct proof. Had nothing, telling that to the media over and over again, lying through his teeth over and over again. And there's President Trump saying, nope, he doesn't have any of that. That's not true. It doesn't exist. And guess who was right? Right. Mm-hmm. And guess who had egg all over his face, but still just stands up.
This guy's got no shame whatsoever.
He got up and he put on that whole phony voice and read the letter and tried to insinuate things about that letter from the president of the Ukraine, suggesting that President Trump was somehow colluding with the Russians.
Yeah.
Remember when he did that shift? What a scoundrel. Yes.
If he wasn't a robot that seems to be soulless, he would be too embarrassed to run for anything ever again.
Isn't it interesting? You're absolutely right. If you had a conscience, of course you wouldn't do this. But if you did do this, you would seek repentance right and left.
Exactly.
So sorrowful that you had been so wrong. But when you have no conscience, and when you are just a political hack,
who
just wants to achieve for your party whatever the party needs just by any means. You know, this whole impeachment proceeding was so biased, they wouldn't even allow a Republican committee membership to challenge their operation. Same thing with the January 6th commission. What a joke. Yeah. What a one-sided and biased presentation. And this is what these people are about. These people are not interested in a functioning republic. They really wanted a totalitarian state in America where they rule. But boy, oh boy, if Steve Garvey can win, this thing is going to be upset quite a bit, because Schiff is the bad man. He is the guy who does the dirty work.
He's a deep state enabler, if there ever was one.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, with Steve Garvey, he's got name recognition. There's a lot of love for him in California from his history there. So it's a unique circumstance that could encourage those that would never pull the lever for an R to see, oh, Steve Garvey, I like Steve Garvey, and maybe get beyond what we call Trump derangement syndrome. Again, it's fine if you don't like Trump and you don't want, but the point is, take it, you know, as an intellectual and look at the things that are actually done, not what are said. I mean, there's still right. people that
ask yourself, really, the Reagan question.
Yeah.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And if there's one person in this country who says yes to that, mm-hmm. then it's Adam Schiff. Because only if you are willing to lie in a bold-faced way could you possibly say that. Mm-hmm. We are so far off, worse off than we were 4 years ago. Remember when there was almost no inflation? Remember when we had an economy that was roaring, where we had clear upward mobility for everybody in the country? Remember when gas hovered around $2 a gallon? Remember when you could afford your groceries? Remember when you knew that the borders were safe? Remember when you knew that the country was so strong, it got rid of Soleimani and sent a clear message to our enemies that if you dare take on the United States, there are serious consequences? Remember when there was no invasion of the Ukraine? Remember when Iran did not dare to unleash Hezbollah and Hamas into Israel?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we were not on the brink of war? Remember when China would not have acted against Taiwan? Remember when there were tariffs against China? Remember when the United States actually had a budget that was not in the position of being $34 trillion in debt, with $2.5 trillion at plus every year in deficit spending? Remember when there was no climate change agenda destroying the United States? When was that? Let me see. When was that? Hmm. Oh, that was under President Trump.
Well, which
come on, let's be logical and honest yeah. about the facts.
Jonathan,
they're against Biden or Trump.
Yeah, there are some people that for some reason are allergic to the facts. They're emotionally reacting. They're not thinking critically or intellectually. Just on the warfare alone, you know, we talk about the party of war, the neocon need to be in everywhere, every time. Give Trump props when he was president. He didn't start initiate these new things. I'm not saying it was perfect, but there's an inertia, as we talked about, going back to, you know, the warning about the military industrial complex at a time under Eisenhower. So this is an ongoing issue. And he actually, as a Republican, stood up and said, you know what? War is not good for us. We don't want to enter war. It's a last resort, like we talk about. And yet under Biden, we've seen all of this happen. And I say, when you ask the question, are we better off? Just on that alone, where are the Democrats realizing that their party has become the party of wanton warfare?
Their party has become the party of an invitation to go to war to China and to our enemies. And their yeah. party has also become the party of economic destruction and ruin and of open borders, with no regard whatsoever for the crime and the terrorism and the threats to our survival that come through the border every single day. I mean, this is insane, Robert. We've gone beyond a difference of opinion to a situation in which they are openly welcoming enemies of the United States into our country to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a planned destruction of the United States. And if you're with that party that is destroying our country, you're complicit in it. You are supporting that activity. You need to take a quick look at this, because if you do, you will decide that you cannot support that. Because I'll tell you, it's no longer a difference of opinion as to one policy or another. It is a difference of opinion as to whether the United States should survive as a nation. That's what we're talking about. Should the United States be a separate nation in the world, or should it be melded into our enemies such that we cannot defend ourselves because we are not ourselves? I mean, can you imagine? In another 4 years, upwards of a quarter to a half of the American population will either be comprised of individuals who are enemies of the United States, or at least individuals who are in a massive underground economy that is illegal. When you turn half your population or a third of your population into illegal individuals, what do? Those individuals take jobs for less than Americans are paying.
And they're hurting the poorest among us in the middle class.
Well, but also, a lot of them are being paid so poorly that unless they engage in criminal activity, how can they live? So what activities are available? Well, there's MS-13, there's 18th Street gangs, there's rape, there's sex trafficking, there's drug trafficking. And so what this does is create this endless downward cycle of ruination. Mm-hmm. And if you don't stand up for this now and shift the direction of our country, we are going to be in so much trouble that we will fall into an abyss of socialism. Why did they do this? They do this because if you're terrified, if you don't know that you're safe, if you can't operate your business, if you can't feed your family, if you are petrified constantly, what are you going to do for security? Almost anything. That's what they're counting on.
Right.
So when then they say the government needs to take over this or that, or the government needs to direct your life in order for you to be secure, many will sign up to do it. Look what they did. They wore the masks. They got the jabs. And, and they were forced to in many instances. Yeah. And they did not raise an argument. Many just followed through. Now, many in your audience argued against it. Many of those people who support me did too. But the fact is, the overwhelming majority of Americans cooperated out of fear, got the jab, even though it wasn't in their interests, had their kids jabbed, even though it's, severely risks children. And the government censored criticism. The government took us off the platforms, you and me, Robert. This became a nation that really lost a lot of liberty and allowed someone as horrible as Anthony Fauci to wreak havoc, scare us, cause people to be forcibly vaccinated against their will in instances through coercion and misrepresentation. Must never allow any of this to happen again. Have to make it illegal to impose those mandates all for the future. And President Trump made clear at that rally that he will not allow those mandates in the future.
That was great. He had a number of things. I pray that he is wise enough from his first 4 years experience to realize that everybody pretty much is out to get him, in the establishment, deep state swampy stuff, and that he relied on people that were working against him actively in his administration so that he would choose wiser in this case moving forward. And when they say, this is again another not anti-intellectual statement, oh, but Trump is so dangerous. I'm like, do you see what Biden is doing? And do you see what's really dangerous is what our founding fathers warned us?
Well, I don't understand that argument because look, this is another question.
Yeah.
Was the United States safer 4 years ago or now?
Oh yeah, no, that's the point.
The world feared Donald Trump. They were not able to predict what he would do in response to any action they took against America or its interests. And that's how we want it. We do not want, like this president, telegraphing to our enemies, okay, guys, we're going to send a cruise missile to this location tomorrow to tell you that you were bad. You were bad. You hurt us. You killed Americans. Okay, now what we're going to do is tell you tomorrow at 3 p.m., between the hours of 3 and 4, we will be sending a cruise missile to this location. Okay? So all you terrorists who are there, you should go and bring your families and move out because we're sending it there, okay? So then they shoot the cruise missile at exactly the time, at exactly the location. They blow up a building and nothing has been accomplished. You never eliminate the element of surprise unless you want your enemy to have an advantage. And that's what the Biden administration does, not Trump.
No, it's buffoonery foreign policy. And I wanted to bring up the larger principled stance here that you would perceive or anybody would perceive somebody as potentially dangerous. Okay, human beings are fallible, but we do have a four-year track record where compare it against the almost 4 years of Biden. Who engaged in more foreign wars and wasting of the precious resources of America, much less the risk of putting American people under more duress and threat based on a horrible foreign policy. Sure. And then we look at, again, the history of our founders to say, when we have a limited, weaker centralized government or whatever, then the people are much safer and secure, right? So the idea is, to make it where there is truly a separation of powers, once again, as opposed to this oligarchy that you've described and written about extensively in many books over the years, Jonathan, where the power that was usually divided, so it was checked. The checks and balances were there so that if one party got control, or one man or woman was like, go, there was a check and a balance. But in the oligarchy, there is no separation. It's all into one. And then you have, again, the concept of the founders that warned us that government has been throughout history the real enemy of the people. It would wage war on its own people, much less, you know, whatever we want to say has happened. So we want to weaken that and go back to a constitutionally limited government where the people that are in government, much less those elected, are bound by the Constitution and not able to run roughshod over the freedom of the people. And you have in courts defended that freedom, the individual liberty that has been run roughshod upon by the three branches of government being combined into one, you know, in the regulatory state. So again, I want to come back to that bigger picture so that we don't get lost on personality, which is often the case. It's easy to go, oh, well, Trump bad, Biden good, or vice versa. I don't even want it to be only about that. Let's talk principally, like I know you can do, and you do so well, and can go in and go, let's get beyond this personality stuff and go into the heart of what really has gone wrong and how to correct it. And again, this is where you're so strong that I want people to hear you and check out emord4va.com and support this man and his adventure, I will say, for the restoration of the Republic, which is a big part of my journey here as well, which I love doing.
Well, you know, the defining characteristic of our great country is liberty, individual liberty. And nowhere else in the history of the world but here was a nation founded on the very fundamental principle that government's whole purpose is to protect the rights of the governed. And in order to do that, it had to be severely limited in its delegated power, because any power given the government is potentially at the risk of your rights. And then in addition to that, government was charged with recognizing that your rights come from God, not from government. So government has no power to take those rights away. They are, as the founders said in the Declaration in the second paragraph, they are unalienable. They cannot be taken from you. And that is a revolution in thinking. In a world comprised of the divine right of kings, where you could only act by leave of the king, you had no rights. The king had all rights. And that concept was flipped on its head by the founding fathers, by John Locke, by the notion that all of us are entitled to rights at birth, given us by God, not by government. That's a huge, huge foundational principle that distinguishes us to this day in the world. And in fact, after the Revolution, Jefferson said this ball of liberty will roll around the world, meaning that there would be revolutions mirroring the American Revolution in countries all over the world. And indeed that happened, but in no instance, none, did they achieve success in replicating the American Republic. So as Abraham Lincoln said, we are the last best hope for freedom on earth. And that's because only here do we have unalienable rights given us by God. Even in Canada, even in England, as we have seen with COVID, Parliament has the power to give rights and Parliament takes rights away. Mm-hmm. Not so here, because our Constitution is based on the idea that you have rights independent of the government. And that is a critical defining characteristic. That's why the world is envious of the United States. That's why people, even in Canada and even in England, when they come to the realization that they have no rights except those which Parliament will allow, look at the United States with great envy and say, I would like to be an American where I would have my rights recognized as from God, because everyone on earth knows that it is a mere power distinction that causes a person born to not have rights and another who is privileged to have rights. That is unjust. And everybody in the world knows that. Every single person. And so we are the only nation. And what these people who are in government right now, the Democrats controlling the Senate and the White House, they want us to be like Parliament. They want us to think our rights are not individual, that we do not have unalienable rights, that those rights have to be made secondary to their political objectives. Mm-hmm. They rule, we follow. And that is against what the founders believed. The founders believed that we rule and the government follows, and that the government doesn't even follow perfectly because it is shackled. As Jefferson said, let us bind men down by the chains of the Constitution. The Constitution wasn't to be a bow and arrow that those in power fire at people. Mm-hmm. It was to be a shackle on those in power so they could not run roughshod over us.
Exactly. I mean, that's the basis that we have to reinvigorate that concept and see how it manifests differently from, again, the dancing about various personalities. And again, it's part of human nature. We all have personalities. But the idea, of course, those that are trying to direct the future demise, I believe, of this country, they want to keep us away from those principles of liberty and defense of everybody's liberty, not about just some people or not. That's a ruse, and that's a distraction from what ails us, in addition to, of course, the economic concerns that we have. I mean, we talked about the trillions of dollars of debt that this country's taken on, and you know, now it's what, $2 trillion every, I don't know how many months. I mean, it's like got staggering. And then we know there's a point of no return. And the question is, are we there yet? Or can we reverse it course? Can we reverse course? Because even the Republicans, as you said, whether they be called rhinos or otherwise, are earmarking stuff so that they're going to vote for another ungodly budget. And it's like, it's not just about Democrats versus Republicans. It's the swamp. It's the, you know, career politicians. It's those that are out for themselves versus those that are genuinely in there serving their countrymen and serving the country in a way that allows for its future survival and thriving, you know, a land of liberty, a place where our kids and their kids actually enjoy the freedoms that we've enjoyed in our lifetime, even though we've seen it diminished in the you know, the bureaucratic state that you've written about in the history books as well. So we've got a bigger task. Unfortunately, we still have to deal with the personality worship or disorders of derangement about. And I think, you know, what you do so well is speak right to the heart of that fundamental starting point of America, what makes it good, what makes it great, and what makes all Americans from all backgrounds come together and say, you know what, we respect and want the liberty that we are born with that comes from God. And I realize there are some people that don't believe in God. Again, they have the freedom to not believe as well, but to recognize that our rights come from far greater place than government.
Well, our founding fathers well understood liberty and tyranny. That was the diametrical force continuum that they lived through under George III and the administration of Lord North. And they well understood that they had to stop the tyrannical rule that was over them. They could not tolerate it. They came here to be free. They meant generation after generation to live where they would be under the common law of England, yes, but under a common law of England that was administered in the colonies by their own peers, not by a foreign power. And here we are again, Robert, with our liberties being taken from us in service to international organizations, in service to an agenda that's a globalist agenda. And we're not that far apart from our founding generation in the struggle that we have. It's very similar. Their struggle was against a power in England that tried to insert itself through George III over every aspect of their lives, over taxation, over impressment of the colonists into the British military against their will, over the control of American courts, even having American citizens taken to England to be tried, even having courts that were previously made up of your peers denied you of that right of peer participation in juries and so forth, and then having standing armies and from this a foreign country, essentially. And so it was Benjamin Franklin who wrote the essay that basically defined the United States as essentially a separate nation because of its demography and because of its physical presence and size versus Great Britain, so as to call into question, should an island in which there is a king be able to rule over a people so many miles away that lived on this vast continent and who had as their birthright the concept of individual liberty. And so it was that we separated from England, but it was based on the idea that we would end tyranny, that we had no choice, and that we would create the first republic in the history of the world in which rights were to be protected by the government. and that the rights were unalienable, given to us by God, not by government. And that basic foundational set of principles is unique in all the world and was never replicated. And here we are today with the greatest threat to our existence as a republic. And if we don't change direction now, it will be so incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to do so down the road. And there are people who are cheerleading and pushing this movement to take away our freedom, to transform our republic, which has already been transformed into a bureaucratic oligarchy, into the ultimate totalitarian state, where we are really indistinguishable from a country like Venezuela, and where our whole country is comprised of people who are not here pledging allegiance to the United States, but who maintain their allegiance to foreign powers, many of whom are enemies of the United States. And they get to live here, and they get to take care of, have welfare and food stamps and Medicaid, and take all of our resources and have us taxpayers bear that burden in perpetuity. That's what we're witnessing.
Now, how many other countries? How many other countries would do this? Like a suicidal course?
Look, this is a suicidal course. And no one on earth, no nation on earth would ever embrace this. And it is so hard for Americans to believe that their own leadership is on a suicide mission. Mm-hmm. But it is. And they are heading this country into this. Why? Because it means more power, more control for them. If our economy collapses, where do we go? The government will provide the answer. If our nation is so rife with crime, and there's no protection for you from the police, and you have to exercise your Second Amendment rights just to live, you are going to be in a state of panic. How long will you endure that before you give up to the government? Really, that's what we're talking about. They are seasoning us to be subjects of a new government, a government that is in opposition to the founding principles of the United States of America. That's what they want to do. Otherwise, you know, look at it. Otherwise, who on earth, as you point out, Robert, who on earth would allow criminals willy-nilly to enter their country? Who on earth would allow foreign agents of enemies to come in willy-nilly into your country and to set up shop and to operate here and to go into positions of government and industry and engage in espionage and threaten the infrastructure of the nation and threaten the whole country? Can you imagine to be in a position of Xi Jinping in just a few years? He's going to be able to tell Joe Biden, if he were president, he'd be able to call up and say, oh yeah, let me tell you what we're going to do. You either do X, Y, and Z to help China, or you are going to experience infrastructure problems like you've never seen before. Your water will be undrinkable. If your people drink it, they'll be poisoned. You will not be able to maintain a telecommunications infrastructure. You're going to find that your internet services don't work. You will not be able to prevent an army from assembling in Minneapolis, in Detroit, in San Diego, in San Antonio. I can decide when those armies will form. I can also assure you that your own military has agents in it. And so as a result, if you think you can take up arms against us, you will find those efforts frustrated. So, I mean, literally, when you infiltrate, when this is your plan, do you think this is not Xi Jinping's plan? Do you think that the enemies of the United States who are in totalitarian countries like Iran and Korea, North Korea, do you think that they're not anxious to take advantage of the open borders of this country to put us in a position where they can threaten our existence and use that to blackmail a president or hold up the whole nation? Of course, that's what they want to do. Of course, they are taking advantage of the open borders. Of course, this will lead to these kinds of problems unless we get this buffoon named Joe Biden, who can't say anything truthful, out even, of the White House.
Even with a teleprompter.
And he's the most compromised president in history. Over $200 million from enemies of the United States in response to his influence peddling scam to benefit his family. Let's be serious. Let's look at the evidence. Let's see where we're going. And let's be smart and prevent the train wreck that's coming.
Well, and let's displace those who are complicit with the Biden administration, whether they're Democrat or Republican. I don't care. Get them out. Let's put Jonathan Ebord in the U.S. Senate, Steve Garvey, other people. And again, this isn't about partisanship. This is about those who actually believe there's a good purpose and mission to have a country, to have borders, to defend freedom rather than run roughshod over it. Do you have some events coming up in the next days or weeks that people can attend and see? I know you just like last couple of days since Saturday, I haven't even heard from you. And I said, man, I'm going to be traveling. Can we get this show in? And I'm grateful that we squozed it in here today for everybody, because a week without Jonathan Ebord, it's not the same. You know, we need some sacred fire of liberty, rekindling it every week.
Well, there are many events, Robert, every single day. And it's hard for me to live beyond a day.
Yes.
Because there's so many and my head's a swirling around as to where I'm going, and they're directing me one way or the other. I know that tomorrow night I'm in Portsmouth, and I know that we're very soon going to have debates. So we're going to have debates here in Virginia. Hung Cao is apparently absent from almost every one, but nonetheless, I'll be there. Okay. And there are others there that will be there debating me too. Parkinson is not at some of the debates. He's another candidate. But by and large, all the other ones have been and will be. And this will be good because people will see a clear contrast among the candidates.
Do you think that any of these other challengers will be able to get the signatures? That's not an easy task.
Well, that's right. I think that we're going to see. I mean, I know fortunately for us, we exceeded 10,000 signatures, and that's valid signatures. So we have our own internal compliance department that is validating this, making sure that the signatures that we get are all valid and when they're taken into the total. So we have well over 10,000 valid signatures. We'd like to be around 13 to 16,000 valid signatures just to protect ourselves from any potential for the party to say, oh, you didn't meet it. Yeah. And then in addition to that, we have to have 400 in each of 11 congressional districts, and we have 400 in almost every single one. There's one very hard one to get done, but we're getting that done this weekend. But in addition, we want a margin there too. So somewhere between 500 and 600 signatures in every single congressional district. So we're now working on margins, and we have volunteers all over the state going to events every single night and getting us more and more signatures. I was at the polls in Wirtz, Virginia, with two members of Team Ebord. Others were elsewhere around the state on Election Day. Mm-hmm. And in Wirtz, Virginia, I can report that 187 proud patriots signed the Ebord petition there. And I talked to a number of them. That was a good day for us in Wirtz, Virginia. But we had good days all across the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that's going to be reflected in the submissions. The cool thing about this, Robert, is that because unlike these other candidates, so Cao and Parkinson have paid for companies to go out and get the signatures. I understand Cao paid several hundred thousand dollars to do that. He doesn't have our grassroots organization. And so they came up to me, Robert, and they said, will you pay $400,000 to have the company, same company, go get signatures for you? And I said, I'm not going to buy my way onto a ballot. I'm not going to do that. And so they then said, well, how about 100,000? And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And we are basing our whole ballot petition process on volunteers. And you know how good that is, Robert, because they get to talk. They are for you, right? They understand. Yeah. They're very loyal and strong supporters of this whole campaign.
Yeah.
And so they talk to people. So we've magnified our campaign enormously by all of these volunteers talking to people all over the Commonwealth of Virginia, giving them palm cards, talking to them. It's been tremendous, really tremendous.
Well, think about the people that are paid to go gather signatures. They don't give a flip about Cal or whoever they're just like doing a job and getting paid.
And you know what's funny? We were in this one location in the South, and the chairman there said, well, Emord's going to speak here in a minute, but I see there's a representative from Hung Cao's operation here. Would you like to come up and speak? And she said, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that. And he said, well, look, you're Cal has declined to come here twice personally, but you're here. So this is your chance to tell what your candidate stands for. Just give a little bit of a presentation, just a couple of minutes. Tell us what his basic position are. You've got his palm cards there. You can just read off the palm card if you want. He said, oh, no, no. And then she said, after he kept saying, well, come on, just give it a shot. She said, I don't know what he stands for.
Oh, gee. Yeah.
And I mean, that's just not good, Robert. This is why, really, this should be limited to volunteers, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, buying your way onto a ballot, that is unseemly. It really is. Because if people just based on wealth can be on the ballot versus based on just, you know, grassroots support, what is the point of getting the signatures? The signatures presumably are a reflection of the popularity of the candidate as a litmus test.
Yeah, not when you buy them.
Not when you buy them.
No, that's true. So, hey, real quick, we got a few minutes left here, and I was going to ask you about the rare 9-0 decision of the Supreme Court on the whole, you know, insurrection thing. Look, this is still a hot topic. You know, you can talk to some folks, and if you just say, you know what, January 6th, it wasn't an insurrection. Oh, they think you're a domestic terrorist. Now, as you pointed out, if anybody was engaged in violent activity, they should be prosecuted for violating the law. But for those that were just there, I mean, really? That's what you call it? No. But I just don't see a lot of rational thought there. But regardless, of that distinction, even the liberal court justices said, you know what, you can't just say he's an insurrectionist and take him off the. There was no charge. There's no conviction. What do you make of that 9-0 decision?
Well, it shows. I mean, I think it was very clearly predictable by a lot of us, and I always hesitate to make any prediction about what judges are going to do. But this was so obvious. And so I told Wilkow on the Andrew Wilkow show, I said, look, it's either going to be a 9-0 or an 8-1. And I very rarely predict how justices are going to decide a case, because only a fool ordinarily will make such a prediction. But this was so clearly illegal for Colorado. There is no basis under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, to have a state enforce that provision. In fact, in Section 5, the enforcement is limited to Congress. Hmm. So, there was no basis for them to proceed. The court got that right. That was the essence of the decision, that the states do not have a power to act under the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And so it's an exclusively federal power. And all the justices agreed with that judgment. They had different concurrences, but they all agreed in a 9-0 decision, which very clearly prevents any state from removing Donald Trump from the ballot.
Well, and as far as I know, there's no charge or conviction on the subject anyway. And if you're saying it has to happen in Congress, would they have to have an impeachment hearing? I mean, he's not even president technically right now. So,
well, the section, I think, does not even apply to the president. That was the points that was made by several of the justices. It does not apply to the president, so it would never be appropriate to use against
it. It was a post-Civil War amendment, so it was designed really for those that were fighting for the Confederacy.
And it really only applies to those who take up arms against the United States. And I mean, literally take up arms against the United States, or who provide them aid and comfort. That is, enemies of the United States, which the founding fathers understood to be a foreign power. So the Confederacy was a foreign power because it was against the United States. The Union was the United States. So there really is no application under any stretch of the imagination, regardless of whether the court found there to be some power in the states. Fortunately for us all, the court did not recognize a power in the states to remove someone from the federal ballot. That would have been a horrendous thing with huge ramifications that would enable states willy-nilly to say, I don't like this guy, and for one reason or another, remove him from the ballot on the basis of one kind or another. They nipped that one in the bud, and it's not going to happen here in America, at least not for the foreseeable future, thanks to that Colorado decision.
Well, isn't it, you know, it's not a civil issue. Like when you say insurrection, isn't there like a statute? You're taking up arms against the country in a sense that you would be tried and convicted, and then you can go, oh, here's an insurrectionist. But none of that's occurred as far as I know.
Right. There is no, look, you'd have to show that Trump himself. Of course, it doesn't apply to the president, but if it did, you'd have to show that President Trump himself picked up arms against the United States, went to war against the United States, or that he provided aid and comfort to those who were engaged in warfare against the United States on behalf of a foreign power. It couldn't even be a domestic situation of violence unless they were acting on behalf of a foreign power under Section 3. Mm. So, I mean, it's a very narrow thing. And as you point out, really, it was intended to apply to the Confederacy. Mm. And it's hard to apply it outside of that context. So this whole thing was a real fiasco on the part of the states. And it's a sign of their gross desperation. The Democrat Party wants Trump off the ballot because they will not tolerate a full and fair election, because Donald Trump will win a full and fair election. And they don't want him to win under any circumstances, even if they have to cheat, even if they have to misconstrue the Constitution, even if they have to sue him over and over and over again in a fruitless attempt because of his will.
I love the claims that if he's on the ballot and people vote for him, he's a danger to democracy. I'm like, let's pull people off the ballot so they can't be voted on. Then we'll save democracy.
That's coming from people in states where drugs have been made legal.
And they're engaged in using them regularly to abuse of standards. Anyway, yeah. Jonathan, thanks for joining me today in a day that I'm traveling over to Atlanta. I hope anybody who's interested comes to these events that I'm attending, and if they can find where you're going to be in Virginia, as you said, it's hard to keep up with you. I know it's hard to keep up with me, so I feel for you. Love to your wife and kids, and we'll look forward to the next Sacred Fire of Liberty edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show next week. I'll just be live from Atlanta, probably at Mom's Place next week at this time, or maybe at the Next Steps Conference, actually, with Tia, so that's going to be fun. Anyway, thanks, my brother. So good to see you, as always, and remember, the power to heal, even politically, is yours.